On this day in 1922, pro-treaty troops opened fire on the anti-treaty garrison in the Four Courts, Dublin, making the start of the Irish Civil War. To talk to me about this, I'm delighted to be joined by historian and author Niamh Hassett. Good morning to you, Niamh.
Good morning, Fran. And thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome, and thank you so much for coming on with us today. Is it fair to say that the Free Staters were forced into this action by the British, Niamh?
Well, I think that's a difficult one, but yes, I think the simple answer is simply it was, yes. I suppose events had been building up since April when the anti-treaty forces went into the Four Courts and occupied it. And really what the anti-treaty side wanted was to provoke a British action. Because don't forget, there were still large numbers of British troops in Ireland, and most of them were at that point stationed in Dublin. So Neville Macready was still in Ireland, and he was still in charge of the British forces there. Up in the north, of course, you had Henry Wilson, who was acting advisor to the northern government. And, of course, the next big thing regarding the Four Courts was his assassination on the 22nd of June. So there had been a kind of an uneasy standoff. And then Wilson was assassinated in London by two members of the London IRA. And they were captured. But Michael Collins, in fact, tried to get to organise their escape from prison. So there's obviously questions asked whether Michael Collins was involved in the ordering of Wilson's assassination. I mean, Wilson was a terrible character. He was an awful imperialist.
He was indeed. There's a new book out about him, in fact.
Oh, that's right.
It makes for great reading. And some people saying and making the point, Niamh, and I wonder, do you agree with this, that the killing of Wilson was our Sarajevo? Would you go along with that?
I think it certainly was the spark that lit the fire. Mm. But that fire was going to be lit by something.
Anyway.
There was going to be, at this point in time, things had broken down. The provisional government's hands were tied. You know, all the hopes at this stage of peace were more or less gone. And I think the biggest one was Collins' promise that we would have a Republican constitution. Mm-hmm. So the Free State constitution would be able to reunite the pro and anti-treaty sides. And so people like Liam Lynch were holding out for that. I mean, Liam Lynch wasn't in support of the Four Courts garrison at all. He didn't want it occupied.
Yes.
But, you know, at this point, it was published on the morning of the general election, so nobody had time to really see the extent to which, you know, the promises had been unfulfilled. Because, again, Britain had rejected all mention of republicanism or any kind of what they termed as the Bolshevikism. The Bolshevism they were trying to quote parts of the 1916 proclamation within the constitution, but the British rejected it outright, and so they had to go with a very watered down, very much the a dominion status constitution, which was totally unacceptable to the likes of Lynch, the moderates.
Of course, yeah. What I'd love to know, Niamh, is what was the will of the ordinary people at that point?
Look, it's very hard to say, really. People wanted peace. But, the overwhelming vote went pro-treaty. But, you know, it's actually complicated by the fact that the register of electors hadn't been updated since the 1918 general election.
Yes.
And at that point, you know, the people who were allowed to vote were men over 21 and some women over 30. And so the register hadn't been updated, and Arthur Griffiths wouldn't allow the register be updated because he said we didn't have time.
Mm.
And so what you had then was men and women of 25, over 25 for men, and some women over 34, which isn't really representative of the people who were in the fight.
So the notion of the pro-treaty grouping defending the will of the people, that wouldn't be sort of accurate as far as you're concerned?
No, and I mean, let's face it, they were talking about it being the will of the people before any election was held.
Yes, of course.
So,
yeah.
You know, there's both sides were full of rhetoric at this point in time. But, you know, that general election in itself, there's quite high questions over the democracy of it. Because, you know, a huge number of people weren't allowed to actually cast a vote at all. So you can't use it as a measure of what the will of the people actually was. But of course, people wanted peace. Mm. There's no doubt about that. And I would assume a lot of people would vote pro-treaty on that. But is it fair to vote for peace when there's a gun being pointed at you, at your head?
That's interesting. The pro-treaty soldiers, they thought it would be a fait accompli and it would be easy enough to take the forecourts. As it turned out, it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, they had trouble with the artillery because, of course, it wasn't theirs. It was provided by the British, but Neville MacCready sent it over. And, I mean, Neville MacCready did, he acted absolutely strangely. He was sent over from London with orders, he's called over to London and sent back over with orders to attack the forecourts, which is exactly what the anti-treaty side wanted, because they thought it would unite both the Irish factions. But he said to the provisional government, this is your last chance, basically go and do it. And he provided the guns, and they did, because Collins and Griffith were very anxious to keep the government there.
I think Collins wanted to resolve that peacefully, did he not?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, even until the day he died, Collins was trying to bring the two sides back together, and his death was the greatest tragedy, because really the Civil War, which I do believe at that stage it was heading for that and there was no way out of it, but, you know, it could have been over a lot quicker had Collins had his way. And, you know, had he been supported and given free rein by his own side, as it was, I think he was running a dangerous game, trying to talk to moderates on both sides to bring people together. So, but yeah, he was always wanted the path of peace. And ironically, it was Arthur Griffith probably who was much more gung-ho about, about the whole path to peace.
The big conversation then is, I suppose, the choosing of sides at the time. And it's interesting, I know you were part of a discussion with me in Brew about this, but that notion that people chose a side often based on just friendship, loyalty, as much as ideology.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see it even in the way the Tipperary Brigade broke down.
Yeah.
You know, the South Tipperary, Third Tipperary Brigade was mainly Republican. But that's because all the brigade leadership, bar one, went Republican. And most of the battalion leaders, all of them went Republican. And you can see where captains within companies went Free State. Those companies went Free State. You have the 3rd Battalion. There was a couple of the companies went Free State. But it was based on personality and who people knew and who people liked. In mid-tip then, you had a split within the brigade at the top level. So that was almost a half and half, free state versus anti-treaty.
So. Yeah, it's interesting. And you know, a lot of neutrals, they appear, from what I've read, to have been dismayed by the outbreak, the Labour Party, for example, denouncing the outbreak of hostilities.
Yeah, it was difficult, and I think the Labour Party, they were pro-treaty. They were themselves pro-treaty. Mm. The whole person, everything was out of their control at that stage, and I do think Britain was pulling the strings to a large extent here. It was in their interest to start a war, to basically say, oh, these people could govern themselves, you know? I mean, they'd done it very successfully up in the north already.
Yeah.
From the moment the truce was signed, there was no truce in the north. There was basically a terrible year of bloodshed, 1921-22 there. But, it took a little longer down south because people worked very hard to keep the unity. And it was almost a miracle that they lasted until June.
As we said, the Four Courts, not a quick, clean victory. How long did that last, in fact, Niamh?
I think it was 3 days, was it? Yeah, three or four days.
Three or four days, like that.
And I mean, obviously, the destruction of the Public Records Office was a shame, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was the big thing there. Yeah. But I do, what makes me laugh, in a way, about that, is you often hear people blaming Ernie O'Malley for putting all the munitions in the Public Records Office. But nothing would have blown up if it hadn't been shelled in the first place, unfortunately. But, you know, it was an awful bombardment. But the Free State troops actually suffered higher casualties than the Republicans inside in the Four Courts. You know, but it was an awful start to an awful year and a half, you know, and the escalation of violence then on was just awful.
And the divisions that I suppose we still have fallout from today to some extent, I'm sure you would agree, Niamh. What have you made of the last 10 years of centenaries and the like? What have you made? Do you think we've done it properly?
It's a really good question. I think locally people have done it fabulously. They've done a great job remembering the small local events.
Mm.
And nationally, you know, I think the government made a lot of mistakes and missteps. I mean, obviously the Black and Tan, the RIC commemoration was their low point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the civil war is going to be far more difficult for the government. Because there's an awful legacy there. Because it, as you said, it's never been resolved.
Yeah,
I mean, there's still people fighting the civil war in their head. It's not going to the problems that both sides had were never properly addressed. And because the country was so scarred and depleted after the civil war, none of those wounds were really addressed. Most of the Republicans just went abroad. And the rest of them kept their heads down, you know, and until Fianna Fáil got into power in the 30s, you know, even then, because Fianna Fáil were part of the establishment, the Republican ethos was lost and just kept going in a sort of, you know, subversive manner.
And if it were up to you to plan how we would look back at this stage, and how do you think we should do that?
It's so hard because particularly later in the Civil War with the executions, you know, I'm a great person for believing in the facts and bringing it out, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm.
And commemoration, like, it can be problematic at times like this. I think you commemorate your dead, but you don't. It's difficult for the government to commemorate executions, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it'll always be the sort of Republican centenary.
Yeah.
So those will be. It's so difficult, but I think, you know, everybody has to stand up and sort of recognise the wrongs that were done.
Yes, but if you say the good, the bad, and the ugly, and still you take issue with Charlie Flanagan and the RIC, discuss, absolutely, as they say, Niamh.
Yeah. So when I said that, exactly, yes, commemoration is problematic. So facts and lectures and those kind of things are wonderful ways of bringing the truth or facts to light and to let people understand why we got there. But when you're laying wreaths, you know, particularly for members of the Black and Tans, that is problematic.
Yes.
Because you're honouring people, some of them who are good men. But when you honour them as a group, then you have a problem because you're basically saying that whatever.
Even though many of them were as Irish as ourselves.
But still, I mean, we don't commemorate, we don't honour people who did bad things, whether they're Irish or English.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think we should do that. I think we can honour people who gave their lives for a cause.
Mm.
But there's a difference between that.
Yeah.
But it is a very grey area, isn't it, Fran?
It is, but wasn't it very interesting, Niamh, when the whole debacle around Charlie Flanagan at that time. Even moderate people got involved in that, you know?
Yeah, but sure. I mean, the Black and Tan, let's face it, yeah. The Black and Tan, that was just a terrible thing to even try and do that.
But I was amazed that people who would normally not speak up in any sort of fashion about something were getting up on soapboxes about it.
Yeah, isn't folk memory an awfully powerful thing?
Indeed it is, yeah.
You know, it's still there. We all heard it from our grandmothers, the carry-on that was going on. And it's very hard to stomach it then when you see people saying, oh, you know, both sides. But, you know, this whole shared experience thing, which I have a problem with, because, you know, a perpetrator of a crime has a very different experience of that crime from the victim of that crime. So, you know, you can't put the two on the same and equate it.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? Niamh, I could talk to you all day, and we really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Not at all.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye to you, Niamh. That's Niamh Hassett there. And Niamh is tremendous. She's a great speaker, as you would have heard there, and great historian and author. She's written about so many different subjects involved in the War of Independence and indeed the Civil War as well. 1800-938-007. The text and WhatsApp is 083-311-3311.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com. Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. You can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.